This is Crime Binge.
Welcome to Crime Binge,
the podcast,
where this week we are on episode 60, where we are covering Vanessa Guillen.
And obviously, this is an ongoing case.
Yeah.
And we're covering the disappearance and murder now of Vanessa Guillen. And Vanessa's family is worried that her disappearance is linked to sexual harassment she was allegedly facing in her unit. And Vanessa's story sparked national outcry and is shining a light on a history of sexual misconduct within the military.
Yeah, and this is our first, like, ongoing case I think we're actively covering.
Definitely, yeah.
But it was just one that was, like, in the media so much, and there's already so much information out there about this case that we really wanted to cover it because it was really interesting. And I've actually wanted to discuss some similar stuff that's happened in the military in the past because I do find it very, like, sinister. So I think it's going to be an interesting topic this week.
Yeah.
But before we get into today's case, what are you binging this week, Sarah?
So this week, I'm a little embarrassed about my binge.
Yeah.
It's a Netflix show, and I started watching it kind of as a joke.
Yeah.
And then I just watched the whole thing. And it's called Australia's Cheapest Weddings. And so basically, it's just, it follows couples from Australia and New Zealand. And they have, like, some have a budget of, like, $2,000. Some have a budget of, like, $6,000. And they just try and do all of these terrible things. Like, there's some things that you DIY in your wedding, and there's some things that you don't.
Yeah.
And, like, there's just some crazy stuff. Like, some of them turn out really cool. And I'm like, wow, taking some fucking pointers. But then some of them, they, like, for their wedding or reception,
yeah,
they had it in essentially the garage of their house.
Okay.
And they just, like, put black tablecloths on the walls.
Yeah.
And it just did not look nice.
Yeah.
And it's just, it was like a funny reality TV show that, like, I watched with my friend to kill some time and make fun of stuff. And then I was like, well, I'm just gonna keep watching it. And there's only, like, one season, and there's only, like, 10 episodes on it. So it's not that, like, time-consuming, but I definitely watched them all real quickly.
Oh, yeah. Why not? That sounds like great fun, honestly.
Yeah. But I did get some pointers and stuff I could DIY and, like, spend less money on.
Do you think that it'll turn out as nice-looking as when they did it?
No, never. Are you kidding me? I'm terrible. I'm not artistic at all.
Fair, fair. That's okay. Not everyone has to be artistic.
Yeah, but that was my embarrassing binge. What are you binging this week, Morgan?
I am binging a YouTube channel because I'm a YouTube folk. And this one just happened because I kept getting suggested videos, and it is the YouTube channel called Dr. Todd Grande.
Okay.
And he does videos where he analyzes YouTuber apology videos, which is hysterical because YouTuber apology videos are always the worst. And he also, on top of that, will do, like, mental health and personality analysis of serial killers.
Oh.
He did one on Israel Keyes. He did one on the Luke Magnotta case. Like, he does a lot of them. And he also does the standard psychological stuff of how to tell you're dating a toxic person and stuff like that.
So he's, like, all over the place.
He's all over the place, but he also has the world's most monotone doctor voice you've ever heard at the same time. And it is just truly delightful because in these videos, he's in a very calm, professional voice the entire time, but it's just lightly roasting people. For example, in Shane Dawson's apology video, he just says things like, it seems like his maturity level is not that much different than that of an 8-year-old. And is there such thing as a bad apology? And as to that, Shane has demonstrated that undoubtedly, yes, there is. And just like everything is just a light roast of these people who are making these videos where they're fake crying or something like that. And it's just fantastic. That's, you know, amazing. Just the most educated roast you've ever seen. And it's truly delightful. But then he also does really interesting videos like covering Luke Magnotta. So, yeah, it's very dumb. And I highly suggest anyone watches it if you think that kind of stuff is funny.
Yeah, I've never heard of him before.
Yeah, I think that it got suggested because all of the YouTube drama that's going on top of the real world issues. And it's just him roasting all of these different apology videos. And so it was like, hey, do you want to see this? Because this is funny. But yeah, that's my binge this week. But before we get into today's episode, I want to make a correction from last week. Because at the end of our episode, we just like vaguely mentioned that the Golden State Killer was pleading guilty. And we were both wrong.
Okay.
So the Golden State Killer pled guilty to 13 counts of first-degree murder and 13 counts of kidnapping.
Okay.
And then his sentencing is going to, it's supposed to occur in August.
Okay.
So he did it basically like for a plea deal, essentially, because that's what they always do. He didn't want to get the death penalty. But yeah, so that's pretty significant. It's not by any means all of his victims, but it's a pretty decent amount considering a lot of them had passed the statute of limitations and all that.
Yeah, and I did see like they're not doing the like victim impact statements until the sentencing in August.
Yeah.
But they did have some of the victims speak about their experiences and like what happened. And like one of the women, when she was describing her attacker, described him as having a small penis. And apparently the whole courtroom like went silent for a second, and then everyone just started applauding her.
Damn, and that's fantastic.
That's awesome. Yeah,
because you know that hurt that man's ego.
Oh yeah.
Even at that age he was, it still hurt him inside.
Yeah,
which is delightful, and he deserves it. He deserves to feel the public shame.
He sure does.
All right. So like we said, this is an ongoing case. So information is bound to change constantly.
Yeah. Especially like we're recording this on Monday, and by Friday when it's released, there's probably going to be more stuff.
Yeah. There is probably going to be even more information out, and we're going to provide updates along the way if we can on what is going on. But for now, we're going to give you the story as we know it. Vanessa Guillen was born on September 30th, 1999, in Houston, Texas. She was raised in the Houston area and was one of six children to parents Gloria and Rogelio Guillen. She went to Chavez High School, where she graduated in the top 15% of her class. She was also an active person who loved to jog, and she played soccer in high school and enjoyed other physical activities. And once she graduated from high school, she knew that she wanted to join the Army, and she had actually wanted to join the Army ever since she was a little girl. Her sister Lupe said, "She used to tell my mom how she wanted to be a soldier because she wanted to protect and serve the nation. She wanted to be a fighter. She wanted to be a hero. She wanted to be someone in life." In June 2018, she joined the U.S. Army as a 91F, which is in small arms and artillery repair. She was first stationed in South Carolina and then Virginia. In early 2020, she was transferred to Fort Hood in Texas. Fort Hood is in Killen, Texas, and it's actually one of the largest military bases in the world. About 3 weeks prior to Vanessa's disappearance, Her mother noticed that she started acting withdrawn and wasn't really sleeping that much. After a lot of coaxing from her mother, she revealed that she was being sexually harassed on base and didn't feel safe. She would describe Fort Hood as being evil. She told her mother that one of her sergeants was harassing her, stalking her, and constantly staring at her. He would also follow her wherever she would go jogging. And this is all alleged, by the way. Mm-hmm. When her mother told her to report the sergeant, she said that she didn't want to because she knew of other girls that had reported sexual harassment and had not been believed or had gotten in trouble, and some had even been dismissed for making the allegations. When her mother tried to persuade Vanessa to give her the name of the sergeant who was doing this, saying that she would report him for her, Vanessa did not give the name and said that she could put a stop to it herself. And in other interviews, her sister Lupe says, "My sister was too afraid to report the harassment because no one would listen to her. They take sexual harassment, sexual assault as a joke. They don't care."
So the 20-year-old private first class, Vanessa Guillen, went missing on Wednesday, April 22nd, 2020. She was last seen in the parking lot of her barracks between 11:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. The Army Criminal Investigation Division, also known as the CID, was notified of her disappearance the next day on April 23rd. When on the hunt for her, she was being described by the CID as being 5'2", 126 pounds, of Hispanic descent, with black hair and brown eyes. She had multiple tattoos, a cross with a flower on her left arm, another flower on her left arm, and a mountain with a circle on her left shoulder. She also has a mole on her face, in between her mouth and chin, and on the day of her disappearance, she was last seen wearing a black t-shirt and purple fitness workout type pants. The CID said that they found no evidence that Vanessa was assaulted, but investigators believe that foul play was involved in her disappearance. And Vanessa's mother, Gloria, told reporters that she didn't trust the U.S. Army's handling of the investigation. And the family's lawyer, Natalie Kawam, says that the family believes that they're being kept in the dark about some stuff. During the search, a witness came forward that said on April 22nd, Vanessa had been working in an arms room and left to visit another arms room that was controlled by Specialist Aaron Robinson. And she left to confirm serial numbers for weapons and equipment. And when she left, she did not take her ID, bank card, or keys, which obviously shows that she had all intentions of returning to this room when she was done. Through phone records, authorities were able to determine that the last outgoing text on Vanessa's phone was to Aaron Robinson, and that he would have been one of the last people to see her before she disappeared. It was also determined that April 22nd was Vanessa's day off, but she was called into work. And authorities do say that it was not Robinson who called her into work. CID senior agent Damon Phelps says that they were co-workers, but worked in different buildings, and he was not in her line of command.
So the authorities went on to interview 20-year-old specialist Aaron Robinson on April 28th. During this interview, he stated that on April 22nd, he texted Vanessa to tell her that he was in the arms room. He said that after she arrived at the room, she confirmed serial numbers with him for equipment and weapons, and after that, he gave her some paperwork and the serial number for a 50 caliber machine gun that needed to be serviced. Robinson then said that Vanessa had left the arms room and believed that she would be going straight to the motor pool to deliver the paperwork. Witnesses at the motor pool said they were prepared for Vanessa to come and bring them the paperwork, but she never did. Robinson then stated that after he finished his work, he left and went to his off-post residence, which he shared with his 22-year-old girlfriend, Cicely Ann Aguilar, who is actually the estranged wife of a former Fort Hood soldier. And dating the wife of a former soldier, even if they are separated or estranged, is actually against the rules in the army and breaks protocol, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they wrote down bros before hoes.
Exactly.
That was an awful joke. I'm so sorry. He said that he only left the residence once that night at around 6:30 p.m. when he had to go back onto post to sign a onto a government computer to enroll in training. The CID got the best polygrapher around in order to give Robinson a polygraph test, but he refused one. And we know now that technically refusing one of these is not a big deal.
Yeah.
You should refuse a polygraph if you're asked to take one. But it makes him look suspicious nonetheless.
Always.
Instead, they had the polygrapher simply interview Robinson, and he believed that Robinson was clearly lying. Around April 27th is when news stories about the case began to circulate. And on May 4th, Vanessa's older sister, Myra, started an online fundraiser to cover the cost of a private investigator and an attorney because they felt they weren't getting enough help with just the military.
Mm-hmm. Two other witnesses were interviewed on May 18th, which is 26 days after she disappeared.
Which is 26 days too late.
Exactly. These witnesses revealed that on the evening of April 22nd, they saw Specialist Aaron Robinson pulling a large Pelican case tough box with wheels out of the arms room. They saw him take the box, put it into his vehicle, and drive away. And they also said that from the way Robinson handled the box, it appeared that the box was pretty heavy. So on the next day, May 19th, the CID asked Robinson if they could search his phone, which he did agree to. This search showed that on April 22nd, and even as late as 3:30 a.m. on April 23rd, Robinson called his girlfriend, Cicely Aguilar, multiple times. And she had also called him multiple times throughout the day.
Which is weird if you guys are with each other all day.
Exactly. Around June 3rd, the case was gaining more and more national attention. Her family created social media accounts on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook to call attention to her allegations. With this sprang trending hashtags like Find Vanessa Guillen, I Am Vanessa Guillen, and We Are Vanessa Guillen, where other military members share when they have been victims of sex-related crimes while on duty, and most of the time nothing happens.
Yeah,
there's no charges.
It's truly baffling the amount of stories. Like, it's pretty much, if you scroll those hashtags, never-ending accounts on Twitter and things like that. And much like the mini-sode we did this week, it's like these people in power are abusing the systems put in place for people to report sexual abuse, and they're basically being told, like, if you do so, you're gonna lose your job, and you should just expect it to happen if you want to be a woman in this workplace.
Exactly. Like, there was, like, kind of a meme, not really, but, like, a group of pictures going around that showed some of the more popular ones about this. And, like, one of them was that the girl reported it and the man was acquitted and then she lost her job.
Yeah.
And there was one where the girl was sexually assaulted by multiple people and they were like, well, you're new. They're not going to believe you and we're getting away with this.
Yeah. It happens a lot more frequently than you would think.
It does. On June 13th, 2020, hundreds of people came together to protest a lack of information on the case, and they protested at the gates of the Fort Hood base. But the authorities said that over 150 people had been interviewed and over 10,000 man hours had been used investigating the case. So they were like, we are doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And more than 500 soldiers searched for Vanessa in buildings, barracks, fields, training areas, lakes, and trails at Fort Hood.
And I think most of the people were just upset that it wasn't happening sooner.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Like, that's the main thing with this case. Because, yeah. like, eventually there is some sort of resolution. But, like, it took so many months with nothing happening.
It took her parents and siblings having to go to social media.
Yeah.
To get it, like, to get the case trending. And that's what we're seeing with, like, the Black Lives Matter movement and all of that right now, is that the only way to get people to pay attention is if we're loud and we protest and we don't stop talking about it.
Exactly.
And that's another reason why we are covering this case today, because Vanessa and all of the other women and men who are going, like, who are disappearing from military bases across the world, they deserve to have their, like, justice served as well.
Yeah. There was something that said that within, like, this year or the past couple months, just at Fort Hood,
yeah,
there have been 8 soldiers that have either gone missing or have been killed.
Yeah.
In the past, like, 3 months.
And where are those soldiers?
Exactly.
You know, we need to also be finding them as well.
And the answers and who killed them and everything. Yeah,
we need to be looking into those cases. So Cecily Aguilar was first interviewed a month after Robinson was. A month.
Yeah.
On June 19th, who said that her and Robinson were together all night. When asked why Robinson was calling her after midnight if they were together all night, she stated that she had lost her phone, so he was calling it to help her find it.
Which happens. I have my boyfriend do that all the time.
Yeah, I did that literally this weekend because my phone had fallen in the crack of the couch and I couldn't find it.
Mm-hmm.
However, the time that they spent talking on the phone determined that this probably wasn't true if it's lasting longer than, like, the 10 seconds it takes you to pick up and hang up the call.
Yeah, like, I'll pick it up and be like, okay, I found it, thanks.
Yeah, thanks.
And that's it.
Yeah. Usually you can even see the person.
Right?
And if you're talking, you're jokingly, like, discussing it mm-hmm. through the phone. Like, oh, hey, thanks for finding my phone. You're not discussing things for several minutes,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, because you're in the same proximity.
Yeah. Cecily then admitted that she lied to authorities and that they were not together for the whole night. She said that she took a long drive, which she does sometimes to cope with stress, and that during her drive, Robinson eventually met up with her in a park in Belton, Texas, to look at the stars. Phone records determined that both Robinson and Cecily were near the Leon River in Belton on April 22nd, April 23rd, and April 26th. Human remains were found on the base on June 19th as well. And these remains actually ended up belonging to Gregory Weddle Morales, who was another soldier that went missing from Fort Hood last year. And these cases are not believed to be related, but also justice for Gregory, because mm-hmm. we need to know what's going on with that case. While the investigation ensued, Robinson was advised not to leave the base. And according to the family's lawyer, they used the spike in COVID-19 cases as an excuse to keep him on base. On June 29th, authorities were called to an area close to Leon River where contractors working in the area detected a foul smell. And this site was about 100 feet from the river. Texas Equisearch founder Tim Miller was among the people called out to this scene, and they discovered what appeared to be the charred top to a pelican case. Sound familiar? Tim said that when they found the burned areas and the pelican case, the CID officer that was accompanying them said that he didn't think it had anything to do with the case and that there was no point searching it.
And it's like, who doesn't just search a charred box found in the middle of nowhere? Like,
regardless.
Obviously, that's something not right.
Also, I don't know specifically what a pelican box is, but I would assume that it's common for the military base to have them and that the CID officer should know that this is something that could potentially come from their base and they should check it regardless.
Yeah. Like, it's just, it's a brand of like really large like tote boxes that you can fit guns and other things.
That's what I assumed. Yeah. It's basically like the fucking Yeti of gun boxes. And yeah. It's just like, you don't need to spend that much money on a fucking box. That's besides the point. But yeah, you would think that like as a CID officer that you would know this was common for the military base to have and that maybe we should look into it. Just mm-hmm. a thought. I love Texas Equisearch, by the way, from like all of the cases we've done where they've stepped in. Just
yeah,
they're doing the Lord's work. So Tim said that he and the other people there had to push the CID officer into searching the case. And he finally would entertain the idea after Tim showed the officer pictures of Robinson leaving the arms room carrying a similar type Pelican box. It took that much effort to just open the fucking lid.
Yeah.
That's too much effort. Once they were able to search the box, partially charred human remains were found, and these were believed to be the remains of Vanessa Guillen.
So at around 8:30 p.m. on that same night when the remains were found, on June 29th, the investigators confronted and reinterrogated Cicely Aguilar. And this is when she finally confessed. Cicely said that Robinson had told her he had beaten a female soldier to death by repeatedly hitting her with a hammer on April 22nd. He told her that he did this because Vanessa was going to report his affair with Cicely to his superiors and he didn't want to get in trouble. And she knew about it because he had like pictures of Cicely on his phone and stuff like that.
Right.
So after beating her to death, he then stuffed her body into a Pelican case box, which he left in the armory room for literal hours until he returned later that night to collect it and put it in his vehicle. Cicely said that late on April 22nd, Robinson picked her up from the gas station she worked at. He then drove her out to an area by Leon River where Robinson had already dropped the box off earlier. So he opened the box and showed her the remains of Vanessa. He had already purchased plastic bags, shovels, and lime to help dispose of the body. She says that she then helped Robinson dismember Vanessa's body with a machete, removing the head and the limbs. They then lit the remains on fire, but were having trouble getting the body to burn completely, so they decided to bury the body in three separate shallow graves. Cicely and Robinson then return to the grave sites on April 26th, with some cement mix that Cicely had purchased online. They unburied the body, covered it in the wet cement mixture, and then reburied it in the same three holes. So, like, they went back and unburied her body. Yeah. And, like, that is a lot to do.
The thing that I don't understand about cases like this is that, like, murdering her wasn't enough. Then murdering her and dismembering her to like get this control wasn't enough, to the point where you just have to keep they keep defiling the bodies in any way possible, or the body, and it's just like, why? Is it really just because she was going to tell Cicely, like she was going to tell your superiors about Cicely? That's why she deserved this?
And you were going to get in trouble? Like,
yeah, I guarantee that he would have gotten in less trouble than Vanessa would have gotten in if she had reported her sexual harassment.
Exactly.
It's like, if that's the true reason, which I don't know if it is, that's a horrible reason. There's no good reason to murder someone, but that's an even worse reason. Mm-hmm. It's just upsetting. Like, why?
Yeah. So on their way home, they threw the hammer, machete, and Vanessa's destroyed cell phone out the car window. They then returned home and burned the clothing that they were wearing. And during this interrogation where Cicely was being or was confessing, investigators told Cicely to call Robinson. And when she did, he denied doing anything to Vanessa. But later, he texted pictures to Cicely of news articles about human remains being found near Leon River. And during a phone call with Cicely, court documents show that Robinson had told her, quote, "Baby, they found pieces. They found pieces." And obviously authorities believe that this was referring to the human remains that were found.
Yeah. According to the family's lawyer, after all of this, the CID did not get a warrant for Robinson's arrest, but they did want to bring him into the station. They did not want to charge him with the murder right away and were first going to try and go after him about the affair. And we assume it's just to try and get a confession out of him, like to trigger the affair led to this, led mm-hmm. to that type of thing. On July 1st, U.S. Marshals, Killen Police, and the Lone Star Fugitive Task Force wanted to bring Robinson into the station, but he escaped the base on foot. They eventually found him walking along a commercial and residential area on the northeast side of the city, just a few miles from base. But before they could arrest him, he produced a personal handgun, put the gun up to his head, and shot himself. He was pronounced dead on the scene, and this was around 1:30 a.m. Cicely Aguilar was then arrested by Texas Rangers and held at the Bell County Jail. On July 2nd, Bell County officials stated that she would be transferred to federal custody due to being charged with one count of conspiracy to tamper with evidence by the United States Attorney's Office. If convicted, she faces a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison. I feel like she, I guess that's what she did do, huh? Yeah. I feel like she should also be charged with, what's that one where it's like gross something of a corpse?
Gross misconduct or something?
Yeah, like I think when you purposely do things like that to a body afterwards and you keep going back, that you should always get charged with that.
Yeah, and like I feel like covering up a murder, I'm pretty sure there's a charge that you get for like aiding and abetting and murder.
Yeah, not
like
just
that.
Like a tamper with evidence. Yeah. But I mean, this is just the beginning, so she could get charged with more. But for now, that feels like a weird singular charge to mm-hmm. hold her on. On July 1st, Vanessa was posthumously promoted to the rank of specialist due to her time in the service. And in a press conference on July 1st, after Robinson killed himself, Vanessa's sister Myra talked about meeting Robinson. "When I first went up to that base, that subject, I met him, not knowing that he had something to do with it. I felt something was telling me that he did something, and I wasn't wrong apparently. And apparently now he kills himself. Why? I don't know. But whoever is responsible has to pay, and we demand a congressional investigation." The family's lawyer said on Nancy Grace's podcast that they believe that this is bigger than it looks and there could have been some sort of army cover-up, and that Robinson had people helping him and that there were higher-ups that know the truth. She says this because the witnesses who say that they were the last people to see her alive changed their story from seeing her at 1 p.m. to seeing her last at 11:30 a.m. Another reason they believe this is because of the timeline. Robinson would have had to clean up the scene within 43 minutes from the time Vanessa got there to the time that he left. In the way that Vanessa was killed, there would have been blood everywhere, and in the arms room, there are no towels or cleaning supplies, meaning a couple of different things would have had to have happened. He would have either had to go out and get these things within 43 minutes of cleaning up the whole scene, he had help cleaning it up, or the crime was premeditated and he had already placed the cleaning supplies in the arms room beforehand. also a thousand other possibilities.
Exactly.
It was also discussed that the crime scene investigators should have spent more time searching the arms room and most likely would have easily been able to find traces of blood there, which is probably true as well.
Because, mm-hmm. you know, even if you clean up blood, if you're not a professional, you're probably not cleaning up all the blood.
Yeah, and not to be graphic, but if she was killed with a hammer, that would cause a lot of splatter.
Yes.
So splatter is going to get all over the place and you're not going to see it on that one weird spot, you know?
Exactly.
The family also has theories that this was premeditated because Vanessa was not scheduled to work that day and had been called in on her day off. Authorities say that it was not Robinson who called her in, but one of her superiors, causing the family to believe that other people were in on the murder and they were like luring her in. The family is also suspicious of the box containing her body being left on base. And it was left either in or right outside the arms room. There's differing info because it's a developing case. But that was done so for hours with no one moving or looking inside the box. Yeah.
So Fort Hood officials have said that, again, they have not found any connection between sexual harassment and Vanessa's disappearance. But, you know, they're going to look into the allegations.
Yeah.
Major General Scott Afflant says that he had also requested an investigation into Fort Hood's SHARP program, which is the Sexual Harassment and Assault Response and Prevention Program, which, like, I'm pretty sure that's what the thing we did in high school was called, too.
Probably. I honestly don't remember.
So they wanted to determine if there are any systemic issues with their program.
Which I would say there probably are.
Yeah. Lupe Guillen told NPR, those SHARP classes haven't worked at all. And even though Robinson told his girlfriend that the reason why he killed her was because she was going to report him for the affair, the family believes that it was because he was one of the people sexually harassing Vanessa and she was going to report that.
Yeah.
And personally, like, I mean, that makes more sense to me. And obviously, like, a guy isn't going to want to admit to his girlfriend that he's being sexually inappropriate with another woman and, like, just kind of making something else up that would kind of fit. So, like, I don't know. Personally, to me, it could have been even a mixture of the two, but this kind of makes a little bit more sense.
Right.
Her family believes the disappearance was not taken seriously and is calling for a congressional investigation, as there wasn't progress in the case until national pressure was put on the base officials. The family lawyer, Ms. Kawam, is calling for legislation that would establish better protocols regarding sexual harassment and assault, like allowing members of the military to make reports through a third party rather than having to do so through the chain of command.
Yeah.
Which makes total fucking sense.
Yeah, because, like, if your HR director is the one sexually harassing you, who do you go to then, you know? Like,
exactly.
You have to go to someone who's not in that area of expertise. Like, you need to go to a third party.
So, at the point of this press conference on July 1st, the remains that were found had not been officially identified as Vanessa's, but the family was confident that it was her. However, Lupe says that while she is confident, she's trying not to lose hope that her sister could still be out there. In a statement made by Kawam, our hearts are broken. We feel pain, frustration, and devastation. This shouldn't have happened. We demand a congressional investigation. We demand the truth. If this could happen to Vanessa, this could happen to any one of our sisters, daughters, and mothers. There is no reason why a young, beautiful girl who joined the army to honorably serve our country should be in a shallow grave near our own turf.
Which is true.
Mm-hmm. And so I listened to an episode of Murder Squad where a female fellow soldier that was in the same cavalry as Vanessa wrote into the show. And I thought that it was important to share, even though she wrote into that show and we're giving them all the credit.
Yeah.
But she said that she wanted to give some insight as to what was happening inside the base when Vanessa went missing. And she said that where there are cameras on base, they're only in highly populated and security risk areas and not typically in working areas. So there wouldn't be cameras showing what happened to her.
Right.
And she also wanted to talk about like the accusations that the fellow soldiers weren't doing anything to help and that they waited too long to start looking. But she says that this was untrue because her fellow soldiers were doing stuff. And the day after she went missing, the regiment had soldiers out looking for her in work areas and the training areas. And at one point, we had four separate companies designated to searching the training areas and areas of interest. And then she said, I can't speak for the Army CID, but the regiment and her fellow soldiers and her cavalry were looking for her.
That's good mm-hmm. to know that at least they were looking.
Yeah. On July 4th, a protest was held in College Station, Texas, to demand justice for her murder. They also said they hoped their protests would inspire others to stand up for justice. The event organizers wanted everyone to be as safe as possible, so they provided free masks and hand sanitizers to the protesters.
Yeah, and like all of the photos, pretty much everyone is standing 6 feet apart from mm-hmm. one another with their signs, and everybody is masked and everybody is like maintaining social distance. It was great. Yeah.
So, unfortunately, on Sunday, July 5th, 2020, the remains of the body had been positively identified as Vanessa Guillen's. And on Sunday, her older sister posted on Twitter, it's been confirmed.
Yeah.
The family lawyer told CNN that her remains had to be sent over to Dover Air Force Base in Delaware to be identified because they couldn't identify her by her medical and dental records because of how badly she had been bludgeoned with a hammer. Which is terrible.
Yeah, that's awful.
And like we said earlier, this is an ongoing case. We obviously don't have all of the answers right now, and there are new updates every day, but we really felt as though it was important to cover this case, and we'll be providing updates and posting them on our Instagram and Facebook and everything, and hoping that there is justice for Vanessa and any other woman who has been abused in the military.
Yeah. And we will also, in the links of today's show notes, put any links to, like, if Vanessa's family is doing any fundraising for her funerals and stuff. I don't know at this moment if there is one, but we'll put links for that and also their change.org petition mm-hmm. to have her case be looked further into because... we're not here to take a stance as to whether or not it was a military cover-up or anything yeah. like that. Everything's alleged. But regardless, her case should be looked at into more because sexual abuse allegations are very serious and people should feel safe working, especially if they're working a job where they're going out to fight for our country. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Definitely.
Everyone should be safe, but especially if you're going out to fucking protect your country, you should feel safe next to your fellow soldiers.
Yeah.
So just to make it even more of a downer, no, I'm just kidding. we'd like to end this with some sexual assault statistics from the military.
So the first one is that in 2018, 20,500 service members were sexually assaulted or raped, including 13,000 women and 7,500 men. The rate of sexual assault and rape jumped by almost 40%. By 2016 to 2018. And for women veterans, the rate increased by over 50% to the highest level since 2006.
And that's just reported cases even.
Mm-hmm.
Because and it's even more pervasive that they aren't reported.
And so I did read that this information mm-hmm. Is from they were able to report things anonymously.
Oh, okay.
And they did do a The DOD does a pool mm-hmm. where it's non-anonymous, and at least half the cases weren't reported in yeah. that pool as compared to this one where they could remain anonymous.
That makes total sense. Mm-hmm. Of women who reported a penetrative sexual assault, 59% were assaulted by someone with a higher rank than them, and 24% were assaulted by someone in their chain of command.
The vast majority of cases go unreported. 76.1% of victims did not report their crime in 2018.
Retaliation is the norm. 64% of women who reported a sexual assault face retaliation. 66% of retaliation reports allege that retaliators were in their reporter's chain of command. A third of victims are discharged after reporting, typically within 7 months of making a report.
There's also low trust and satisfaction in the system. Over 1 in 4 victims who did not report feared retaliation from their command or coworkers. Nearly 1 in 3 victims who did not report feared the process would be unfair or that nothing would be done. Less than half of the female veteran survivors felt well supported by their chain of command.
Convictions have plummeted by almost 60% in unrestricted sexual assault reported since 2015. In 2018, of the 5,805 unrestricted reports of sexual assault, 307 cases were tried by court-martial and 108 offenders were convicted of a non-consensual sex offense.
So that's like 400 cases out of 5,800.
Yeah. That were even that even went to court.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's a pervasive issue within the military. And I think that it's a pervasive issue as we're seeing in really any areas where someone is in control and is using their power over people.
Really? Yeah. It is.
It's unfortunate.
And hopefully there will be justice and a conviction soon, and that, you know, everything will come to light and the people who were sexually abusing her allegedly will be brought to justice as well.
Yeah, and because she didn't report it before she passed, I'm fearful that, like, right now they're saying, oh, there's no evidence mm-hmm. to prove that, and I just hope that they are able to actually conduct a just, like, investigation into this to see if that was actually occurring instead of trying to sweep it under the rug.
Exactly.
All right, guys. So, we all know that people aren't taking COVID seriously, so we might go back into a new quarantine any day, right? So, this Florida man has already gotten ahead of himself because he says that he's trapped with 200 plus exotic birds with no way to leave his property.
What?
This is occurring in Tampa. So, Mahid Ismaili says that he has an exotic bird rescue sanctuary in Hillsborough County and right now has no legal way to exit his property without crossing over his neighbor's land. His property is surrounded on all sides by other landowners and does not have any direct legal access to a public street. And he is also housing over the 200 exotic birds who need a home, and his reluctant neighbors will not give him access to their property, so he has a way out.
I think that might be his fault for buying land in the middle of other land.
Yeah, very strange move from my guy. But he said he originally had an agreement with one landowner that gave him access, but that agreement has since fallen apart.
Yeah, they were probably pissed there's so many fucking birds.
So, he's basically like, no one will let him leave his land, and everyone, all of his neighbors say he's basically impossible to work with, and that's why this is happening to him. But yeah, he's just currently stuck with his birds trying to get out, and no one will let him because he's a dickhead.
Well, he is the champion social isolator, let's be honest.
Yeah, with him and all his birds.
Yep. He ain't getting COVID from no one. He may get the bird flu, but not COVID.
Very true. Very true. All right, guys. We hope that you enjoyed this more up and coming, current episode. And we hope that you also will check us out on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Crime Binge or at Crime Binge Podcast.
And please remember to rate and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you can. It really helps us out. You can also reach us at crimebinge@gmail.com if you want to send us any suggestions or feedback or whatever. You just want to say hey.
And keep on binging. Bye.
See ya.
Cecily, I don't know what the fuck is wrong with her name, but I cannot say it.
It's because you're trying to pronounce like Cecilia.
Yeah, because who spells Sicily like that?